Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
That was like the beginning, the final beginning of the end. And so that led into like the conversation. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. And he was not, he didn't fight for it. I mean, he was pretty much on the same page.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I know that like this cannot continue to be my life. Like I was just, I didn't even like really recognize, like I said, like really kind of who I was. I kind of like lost myself. Not that he didn't allow me to be myself. I think when you're not like passionate about anything, or like you said, having that like supportive, that supportive spouse. And again, not to say that he was a jerk or anything, but he had no idea how to support me properly.
Right.
And I had never really felt that. And so I just kind of, I think I just get this like smaller version of myself. So feel me when I bring it, sing it loud.
I'm from the loop and I'm proud. Run a mile for the cause. I'm right. Hi guys, it's your girl Nahama, your favorite Jew from the loo. Welcome back to my podcast. And today I am so excited because you're one of my first guests who I've had on who like came to me with your story. I was like, that. I have something I want to share.
I love that. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to get into talking about your story. And I know there's so many different layers that we can talk about. Mm-hmm. And we're just going to go wherever this conversation flows.
Okay.
But I think it's really inspiring how you've gotten over like the social norm of feeling the need to drink just to keep up, you know? Because I know even for me, like growing up, I didn't have a lot of friends who were big drinkers. And then it really wasn't until I got into the workplace that happy hours kind of became a thing. And then I did 75 hard 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time where like I really couldn't even have that one drink at like a happy hour.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, I could still have fun and I could still be myself. And yeah, maybe I have to work on the confidence a little bit more, but it's totally possible.
Yeah.
So I'd love to go into like your sobriety story and everything that kind of factored into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So take it wherever you want to.
All right. So, well, my sobriety started because of everything else that's happened over the last year and a half to almost 2 years. I just feel like it was not a final step, but everything in my life was leading up to that, if that makes sense. So I've always drank a lot. I like partied a lot with friends. I always went to happy hours, you know, anything that had to do with drinking, because, you know, every event, every work event, everything's like, oh, happy hour, sip and see or something. And, but I also, so I kind of surrounded myself with people also that drank more. So then I didn't feel like I was drinking too much because I secretly in my mind always knew that I drank too much. So
oh, you did.
Yeah. And it was, so for me, it was a long time coming. I like admitting to myself and accepting the fact that I knew that I drank too much and finally doing something about it. I mean, it was like, I want to say like, I don't know, 10 years in the making, like where I've always thought about it. There's alcoholism runs in my family. My dad's a recovering alcoholic. He quit when I was, I think, 2 or 3. So there was always been in the back of my mind, and I would, even like I'd go out to eat and I would, or go out to drink or whatever, and pace myself with whoever I was with. Because everyone's like, oh, it didn't seem like you ever drank that much. I'm like, well, if you didn't drink much, I didn't drink much. But then if I went to happy hour with people who drank a lot, then I was like, okay, I'll drink a lot. And if I went to dinner with people who didn't drink a lot, I went home and drank more. So I was still full functioning, woke up, taught 6 a.m. classes or 5 a.m. classes and got up and did all the things. But it's just one of those things that slowly progresses and it doesn't get better. generally. And especially living by myself and then going through my divorce and everything else that was going on last year, it just got more and more and more to the point where I was drinking every night, at least like probably a bottle of wine, if not more, and like wouldn't keep liquor or anything in my house just because I would drink it if it was there.
Yeah.
And then it was just kind of, I tried to do the 75 hard.
Oh, you did?
A lot. And yeah. I always failed because I drank.
Well, what day did you get to before you kind of failed? Or was it an event? Because I feel like one or the two.
It was never it wasn't because of an event. It was just because I just wanted to like drink. Like I didn't always go out to drink. I would like drink at home.
Right.
And so the last time I tried 75 hard was in January. And okay. I think I told everybody that I made it till the 23rd day. And it wasn't, I didn't tell anybody it was because of drinking. It was because of something else that happened. I was like, oh, I forgot to do my outdoor workout. Well, I think I made it like 3 days without drinking. So also being an alcoholic, you're a huge liar. So I completely lied to everybody. And I was like, oh, mocktail. And anyway, not proud of it, but that's just part of kind of the process and what I did. And, but yeah, I think I tried the 75 hard maybe 4 times. And just always, I don't think I ever made it past like a week. Like I said, I did, but I definitely didn't.
Well, that's really cool now that you're able to like even go back and say like, oh no, I didn't do that.
Yeah, I definitely.
Because that's a hard thing to do, to go back on when you told people you did something, and then that accountability is huge.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, I remember when I said this was the reason? Well, it truly wasn't. You're like, oh, you lied? I'm like, oh, yes.
Yeah.
I did. That's literally what happened.
Yeah.
But like, and it was funny because like that idea of not drinking, it never like actually not doing it was something that I didn't think was like, it just wasn't possible.
Yeah.
Like you said, like everything is around happy hour, going to like a baseball game or a concert or, I mean, anything, hanging out with friends. I'm like, well, what do you do if you don't drink? Like, and for me, it was, I think, like you said, it was like kind of like a social thing where like I have a little bit of social anxiety. So like, it'll make me more comfortable. It's just like something to do when you're out. And then it just, obviously, I mean, a lot of people can just, you know, do that, drink when they're out and then not drink when they're home. But
yeah,
I just very much proved to myself that I couldn't do that. But then like the power was, I did a few things like stuff I never thought I could do. I went to a concert this year. I went to a baseball game.
That's huge. And like both of drink. Those I know. Are huge drinking events.
Oh my gosh. I've never, like, it was so weird because I was like the most expensive concert ticket I ever bought. When I bought it, I wasn't sober. And it was great because I remembered the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is amazing. Yeah. And it's definitely, it's just been kind of an very eye-opening experience. Like just a lot of my friend group changed. The friends that I went to happy hour with a lot and drank with a lot, I don't really see anymore and I don't hang out with, which people have kind of warned me about. But I also have friends that are in recovery. I have friends that naturally just don't drink. I have friends that just don't drink a lot. And I have one of my really close friends has a husband that quit drinking 3 years ago. So like she's been a huge supporter and yeah, it's been a journey.
Yeah. And I think we have to backtrack a little bit too, because I was so excited about your story that I just like jumped right in. So like, let's talk about it. But like, I normally like will be like, this is my guest and this is how we know each other. And I was like, no, let's just talk about your story.
Okay.
No, but like, so how Carolyn and I know each other is that she's one of the trainers at Lifetime, which is a gym that I've been going to, oh gosh, I think almost 2-3 years now.
Yeah.
And I've been going at all times. I think I was a 5 a.m.er when I first started going. And now I'm literally there whenever I can throughout the day. Like tonight, it's probably going to be more like 9:30 at night, you know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I go really late sometimes. Yeah. But I've actually sidetracked. But I've discovered – so for me, ideally, it's the 5 a.m. crew because it's kind of empty. There's something really special about like the world still being asleep and you get up. And then the people who are there, which – Lifetime humbles you because you drive to the gym, everything's dark, so you think you're like such a winner.
Yeah.
And then you get to the gym and it's like packed.
Yeah.
And you're like, so I go to a gym of winners. Cool. I'm just normal here.
So true.
So like the energy of the people there in the morning, I really respect it. I mean, I don't know 100% what like everyone at the gym does because we're all kind of like in our zone and to be honest, probably just waking up and trying to use our energy to get our workout done. But like I just imagine that the people who have the discipline to do that every single day, like they must be very successful.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Their lives, because any time that you show discipline and are consistent about it, that's going to bleed into every area of your life.
I totally agree.
You know?
And you're right. There's like something about like the early morning crowd. So I teach classes and like early morning, I teach one like mid morning, then sometimes in the afternoon. And it's like that early morning crowd is there to just like get after. It doesn't matter if it's 5 a.m. It doesn't matter if it's 5:30 or 6. Like they are there. They might be like half asleep when we start, but then like they get after it. And we're not to say that no one else works hard, but like you said, it's like the energy at the gym that early in the morning. Oh my gosh, I love it.
It's literally, I think it's magical, to be honest.
Yeah.
And on a personal note, when you work out first thing in the morning, well, first of all, it wakes you up like nothing else.
Yeah.
Nothing else. Second of all, you start your morning with a win. If you made your bed, two wins.
Right.
You know? And then I feel like the reason why I love working out early in the morning, if I can, is because later during the day after work, especially if you work a 9-to-5 job, which I used to for a long time, then in the evenings, you never know what's going to happen. Is there going to be an event? Will your friend want to do something? Is there going to be some emergency that you have to take care of? And the next thing you know, you've skipped the gym.
Yeah.
Right? But like what's so great about doing in the morning is you got it in. You got to win. You have all this like dopamine and energy to carry you throughout the day.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to worry about doing it anymore.
I totally agree.
It's the best.
Yeah.
But I've found that second to early morning is the late gym goers too.
I've never been there that late. I don't
know. So like there's something about, I would say even 8:30, even though that's a little earlier, but anywhere from like 8:30 on.
Yeah.
To be fair, at Lifetime, it's mostly me and the teenagers at that point.
Yeah. Because they're open until 11. I should know
right.
that. But yeah.
Yeah. But like there's not many people. It's really easy, especially in the weightlifting section, to find what you need. And you're having to wait, especially for me, if I'm trying out something new and I'm not super confident, it's really great to go late at night because nobody cares.
Yeah.
It's also everyone's tired in a different way. Everyone's tired because they're about to go to sleep.
Right.
And like, I don't know, it's such a great feeling. So for me, if I'm trying something new or if I'm doing a workout that maybe I'm a little embarrassed because I still get embarrassed. I don't know why, but
I think we all, I mean, I still get it in my head. Like, I know what I'm doing, but then I'm like, well, what if I do it a little bit wrong and I'm a trainer, you know, all those things.
Oh yeah. That's extra pressure. Yeah. I feel
I'm like, I'd be perfect.
Literally. That's yeah, for sure. And so like, I don't know. I like going either early morning or like late in the evening because I feel like that's like my safe space at the gym. But I'll go whenever.
Yeah.
You know, cause sometimes you just got to go when you have the time to go.
That's true. I've been going. It's working for me to last, like, I would say 6 months or so to go at like 2. And it's the same thing where there's still people there. And there aren't a lot of people there, but there's generally enough where you can still get the whatever equipment you want, whatever machine you want to do.
Yeah.
And there aren't any classes going on. It's actually like it's pretty quiet. You can just like kind of go in and get your stuff done. But it's still like the people that are there. At first I was like, it's weird. Like who goes at 2 o'clock? But it's like, it's the same like core group that's always there at
it's
like
true.
That same time. And it's like, true. You have that like little bond of.
What's so weird is that because my schedule change and because I've been going at different times now, even though I'm like, don't really like, I'm not really super social at the gym, but like I know everybody's faces.
Yeah.
Once you, especially, I like creating those patterns where like you know the regulars and you know when someone's in, you're like, you're not a 5 a.m.er.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is going to last or not.
It's so true.
And like now I know the different faces of people who are 5 a.m.ers versus 9 a.m.ers versus like 2 in the afternoon, 5 p.m. and like later on in the evening.
Yeah.
It's so interesting how I know those core groups. And like there might be certain days where like maybe that group is like, huh, I wonder why she skipped the gym today. And I went just at a different time.
Right. It's so true. Well, today I taught a class mid-morning, and I'm only there on Wednesdays now, mid-morning. And I walked through and I was like, this guy was there. And I was like, what are you doing here? It's 2:00. It's 9:45 in the morning. This isn't when you usually come to the gym.
Right.
It's so funny.
Right. And I think especially in the fitness world, even though we know this isn't true, but I think whether you're a trainer or you're someone who's super fit in the gym, other people look at you and think that you must have it all figured out in all areas of your life.
Yeah.
So connecting back to your story,
yeah,
that's what I think is so cool that we're having this conversation now, because you could be really fit and know all the things you need to do and be someone who's a fitness instructor and helping so many other people get their life together, but still be dealing with your own inner demons.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important to talk about.
Yeah.
And what's so interesting is while I can't relate to the addiction element of alcohol, I very much can relate to not having discipline with food and lying about it to people and saying that I'm doing something, but then totally doing my own thing. And then also even the pacing thing that you were talking about, I've done the same thing with food.
Mm, actually. Yeah. I've done that in my past too.
Yeah.
It all bled in.
Yeah, I think there's a lot. I mean, no matter what your thing is, I think everybody has something that they're struggling with addiction-wise to a certain degree.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's say even budgeting, you could tell people you're doing X, Y, and Z, and meanwhile you've got barely $100 in your bank account, no savings, just scraping by, and no one would know.
Yeah.
Except for you and this big burden that you're carrying on you.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what's so cool about these conversations, because it's something that no matter what you're going through, there's some nugget of truth that's relatable,
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, there are so many people that would come up to me at the gym. I have to be I'm the most fit person there. Be oh my gosh, what do you do? Do you drink? And this is when I still drink.
No, you're a beast at the gym. Thank you. I've seen you work out and I'm like, whew, when I grow up.
I love it. It is definitely an addiction, but a very healthy one. I love it. But, people have asked me you seem so healthy. What don't you eat or what? Because, there's always people are always wondering if there's some sort of magic pill. And I'm there's not. Oh, do you drink? And I'd be oh, not that much. But literally I was drinking every single day. And on the inside, I was so unhealthy. I ate really healthy for the most part, 80% of the time. I still eat pizza and cupcakes and whatever. But people always ask about the drinking aspect. And I was always just no, I don't really drink that much.
Right.
When I knew, I was well, that's a huge lie. And that internal, I think my point is like you said, you can look a certain way and just be a complete disaster on the inside, whether it's physically or emotionally or whatever.
And I think there's also something about, we don't like to talk about our shortcomings or things that we're struggling with till we've conquered them.
Yes. Wow. That's true.
Yeah. It's people who were dealing with weight, it's a little different because you could kind of tell if someone's struggling with their weight versus I don't know, if you're dealing with having trouble with alcohol, you're not necessarily going to look like the stereotype alcoholic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's so many ways to mask it. So I think, what made you decide to want to discuss your story? Because I know this is something you've been going back and forth on, and on your stories you've kind of shared on smaller elements, but what made you want to really open up now?
So the first step was obviously admitting it to myself. And I saw on social media, somebody had posted, this is right before all of this sobriety stuff started. I saw someone else's post about, and it was her, I don't know, whatever year it was, 2 years or whatever it was. And I was wow, she posted about that. Maybe I could do that. And it was that particular weekend, I knew it was the 24th of February was the last time I drank. And it was kind of all compounded into this weekend. I got really drunk Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And I was I'm not going to drink anymore. But I said that each day, and then saw this post, and it just on Sunday morning, and I felt so, I was so hungover. I felt sick, but I hadn't gone out. I had been at home, and I drank enough to give myself a massive hangover. And I was well, what do I do if I'm not going to drink? So I reached out to just a person I'm friends with on Instagram. I mean, like friends, I know him from real estate. And I knew he is very open and public about his recovery. So I messaged him and I was hey, very casually, what's up? I know you quit drinking. What'd you do? And he was immediately was I went to meetings. It doesn't work for everybody. We're meeting for lunch on Tuesday.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
And I was like, wow. Oh, crap. Like,
this is happening.
Shoot, I had to talk about it. Like, I was like, oh my gosh. And so many times between Sunday and Tuesday, I was like, I'm not going to go. But I respected him so much as a real estate agent. Mm-hmm. And like, as a professional, I was like, you can't do that. Like, you have to go. And it was like, even like driving to the restaurant, I was like, just turn around and go home. Don't do this. Don't talk about it. So then he was like, okay, what's up? And I was like, oh, crap. Again, I was like, so I told my story and like seeing that woman's post that I saw on Instagram and then telling him my story and then him being so open about his story and showing this, like realizing how much it helps people just to like feel that you're not alone. Cause I always like sat there and I was like, well, I didn't tell anybody cause I didn't feel like I could talk to anybody about it. And I was like, I have to make this post. And I like wrote that Instagram post and I deleted it and I wrote it and I deleted it. And I think that was like, I met with this person on Tuesday and I think I posted that on a Thursday. And I just remember sitting there and I was like, oh my gosh, like I haven't even told my mom I know I'm an alcoholic yet. And she's going to read this post. And she's going to call me. But it was like, I just felt like I needed to do it. Not so much I needed to do it. I didn't need people to be like, oh my gosh, like I had no idea. It wasn't like for comments or likes or anything. But I was like, if there's like one person that can see that, yeah, and be like, oh my gosh, like she was struggling with that. Like I'm struggling with that. And like so many people reached out, like so many people that I've, you know, your friends on Facebook that you don't really know who they are. And they're like, I've been sober for 3 years. My husband's been sober. Like, and I just like flooded and all like the support and all of that. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm really not by myself. And then I had a couple people reach out and they're like, I don't know. Like, do you think I have a problem? And I'm like, wow, only you can decide that. But I'm happy to like talk to you about it. Like I'm no expert, but you know, it's been like 4 days, and it was just that like 24 hours. I think I was on social media or on the phone for almost the entire day.
Wow.
And I knew after that I was like, okay, this has to be a part of like what I talk about. Like some people, they don't want to talk about it. And I think that's fine. Like they don't want to share their story. And I've had a lot of people say that too, be like, hey, you know, I'm just not public about it. I'm like, I'll tell anybody about it. And I just feel like it's an opportunity, again, just to help that like one other person that is maybe feeling the same way and struggling with it. Cause me personally, like I didn't talk to anybody about it. It was like 10 years of just kind of thinking about it.
Wow. 10 years is a long time.
It's a long time. And I don't know if it's really 10 years, but I just remember thinking back like what I was doing 10 years ago, or maybe even, I mean, I always drink too much, but I know it was at some point after I was married and I was thinking about it and I was like, I just remember, oh, I don't know. I just always thought that I was like, well, you know, I won't drink like during the week, or I made those like little kind of deals and bargaining. I'm like, well, I won't drink during the week, but well, this happened today and this is hard. So then I'll like go to the store and like get something to drink. But it was, it was just always, it was always there.
Yeah.
It was just always in the back of my mind.
And that's also, if you think about it too, like you said, you went through your divorce last year.
Yeah.
Right. And so whether someone's single, in a relationship, or married, I think everybody says, oh, I'm not going to be the one who gets divorced.
Yeah.
I don't see that in my future. Right. And like, especially when you finally do meet that person who you're just crazy about, you're like, that's not going to be us. Like we'll work through anything, you know? Yeah. No one, I don't know anyone who's gotten divorced who said, yeah, I had a feeling I was going to get divorced. Like no one walks into it. And I know so many people in so many different circumstances, but like, I think what is so empowering is that I know most of the people that I know who are on the other side of divorce, after the initial feeling or feelings and pain and just trying to like kind of just find footing, because it's like your whole world blew up essentially.
Yeah.
It's so cool to see how many people have transformed their life in whatever really needed to be taken care of. Because in a weird way, even though marriage in our ideal world is supposed to be something that is like the best and helps bring out the best version of you, sometimes being in a relationship, even if it's only a complacent relationship, even if it's not a negative one, mm-hmm. sometimes you don't push yourself the way you do when you're in like your single era, you know?
100%.
Which the is one, so crazy because yeah. like you almost are codependent
yeah.
on that person.
Yeah.
Something recently that I kind of had an aha moment about as a single woman is that I always used to tell my friends, I'm like, I'm so – there's so many things about feminism that I think were so great for women. Mm-hmm. But I have no desire to be independent. I'm like, I'm tired. I'm yeah. burnt out.
It's exhausting.
And I have so much support from like friends and family. Yeah. So it's not like I don't have like love in my life. But like as a single woman, there's so many – little things and nuances where it's like taking care of yourself as an adult day to day, like there's no one there yeah. to back up and support you.
Yeah.
And so that could be really hard, or as a man too, you know?
Yeah.
And so I realized I was like, but at the same time, I don't think it's healthy to say, oh, I don't want to be independent, because you don't want to be codependent, and that's right. not healthy either. So just this past week, I finally figured out the best way to articulate it.
Yeah.
Which is I believe in being self-sufficient.
Yes.
But that's different than being independent.
Yes.
Because
I love that.
If I'm in a relationship with someone, we can support each other differently depending on what we're going through, because it's never going to be the same always. It's never 50-50. No. Sometimes it's like 90-10. You know yeah. what I mean? Just depending on what each person's going through. Yeah. It could be the day. It could be the hour. You never know.
Yeah.
And so the point is if your partner isn't there to support you how you need them, you can take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people have trained themselves to be self-sufficient, especially if you get into relationships young.
I agree.
You know?
Yeah. I didn't really get into my marriage very young. I was one of my friends to get married. I didn't meet my ex-husband until I was 29.
Yeah.
Which isn't like super late in life, but like just later than it did. It felt very late.
28, so yeah. like I totally
yeah. So I was like,
I feel like I'm on the later end.
I was like the only one that wasn't married.
Yeah.
So I think the self-sufficient part, and I like being independent. And when I first got divorced, I was like, yes, I'm going to do this on my own. This is great, blah, blah, blah. And I know I've proven to myself that I'm self-sufficient. Like, I'm very glad I got that lesson, but it is like exhausting. I'm like, can someone else take out the trash?
Literally,
can someone
yeah.
walk the dog? I mean, I could have shared custody with the dog, but you know, anyway, yeah. I took her. But just like any of it, can someone else go to the grocery store? Like, it's exhausting just being taking care. Like you said, like, that. I know I can do it. I've proven it. So like, you know, at some point that right person comes around. But I spent probably the last 5 years of my marriage, and this isn't to be like rude towards him, probably the last 5 years of my marriage knowing that it was over for me and I should have left. I didn't feel like I had the confidence. Like you said, like, no one, I was like, well, I'm married, so I'm just married. That's right. just what happens. You don't
this
get divorced.
This is my legacy or whatever.
My lot in life.
Yes,
and I'm just here. And which I think is it's kind of not necessarily like a very like nice way to think about it, but
it's so common.
But it is. And I mm-hmm. was just like, before COVID, I was just teaching classes. I was teaching classes over at True Fusion and everything was heated. I was exhausted. And I was like, well, I can't do this forever. Because I mean, I didn't start doing that. I was maybe 39 when I started doing that. I was like, I can't do this forever. It's exhausting. I'm in the heat all the time. I need something else. At some point, I just knew I was going to need to support myself. Like I knew that being married to my ex-husband was like not my forever. It's on some level.
Oh.
So I went into real estate. Because I was like, what am I going to do? I reached out to our real estate agent that we had used, and he ironically decided to go into real estate as well, which didn't really help our relationship that we worked together for a while. But that's why I didn't tell anybody. That's why I went into real estate, but that's why I did it. So I could do both, because
it's like a backup plan. Yeah, almost.
It was like, I just knew I needed to do something else in order to make more money. So that was, that's how my real estate career, and I do love it, but I mean, I'll be honest, if I could just do fitness and yoga,
that's the dream.
I love it. So like, it's, yeah, it's definitely my passion. I love it. But yeah, it was like a lack of belief that I think I could do life on my own or support myself, because my ex made a lot more money than I did, and he always did. So I was like, well, how would I afford things? I mean, he paid for like our mortgage, all the things, and
yeah.
My money went towards, you know, like grocery stores or shopping if I went, or like if I wanted to go shopping, or not that we lived like this massively lush life, but he did all that stuff. So like, yeah, it car sounds payments, like
very
and,
traditional.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, car payments, and I was like, well, what would I do then? I can't do that. I just kind of always chucked those feelings away and just kind of stayed in it until it was like the end of 2022, I think. And I was like, whoa, like I didn't even like feel like I recognized myself. And we were making plans to go to Christmas to Chicago for Christmas. And we weren't getting along. Like we hadn't been getting along. We usually didn't fight that much, but I started just getting into some like bigger fights, like arguments. And we hadn't talked in maybe a week or so. Like living in the same house, sleeping in the same bed, and hadn't really spoken to each other.
Wow.
And he brought up something about going to Chicago to see his family. And I was like, I'm not doing this. I'm not going if this is how we are. I'm not going to pretend that we're fine, because we did that a couple months earlier and went to Florida with my parents, which that was like the final beginning of the end. And so that led into like the conversation, and I was like, I can't do this anymore. And he was not, he didn't fight for it. I mean, he was not pretty much on the same page.
Yeah.
But yeah. And I was just like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I know that like this cannot continue to be my life. Like I was just, I didn't even like really recognize, like I said, like really kind of who I was. I kind of lost myself. Not that he didn't allow me to be myself. I think when you're not like passionate about anything, or like you said, having that like supportive spouse. And again, not to say that he was a jerk or anything, but he had no idea how to support me properly.
Right.
And I had never really felt that. And so I just kind of, I think I just created this like smaller version of myself.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, a lot of people will say like, cause in the Jewish culture, people get married very, very young.
Yeah.
So you definitely don't necessarily know yourself or your passions at that age. Yeah. And I guess the idea is that hopefully it's a good match, someone who will support you and is kind, and you'll grow together. But I wouldn't be surprised if there are a lot of couples out there where one or both of them feel a little lost and not enough passion, especially if like they have kids involved and then there's the responsibility of the family. It's so easy to lose yourself, you know?
Oh, yeah. I've had a lot of friends that, I mean, have going through divorce or have gone through divorce, and which has been very helpful. I mean, we didn't have kids, thankfully. It didn't work out for us, but it made the divorce process a lot easier. But it's still like, I think a lot of people are like, well, I got to stay together for the kids. And I mean, I can't like really speak what it's like to be in a marriage with children, but your kids also like see your relationship, like, and then they're going to copy that. They're going to do what you do. And they see like mom and dad, like, yell at each other and don't really like each other. And they'd be like, well, that's normal. And that's whatever. And then I've had so many friends like get divorced and they actually get along better with their spouses.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, they're actually happier. And then they're better parents because they're happier. And it's just that initial, like, it's hard to like do it, but it's harder to stay.
Right.
And I think it's that realization of like, I've had a lot of people after like people kind of started finding out, especially because we both taught classes at the same gym, which was challenging. And so like, once I changed my name, everyone kind of like was like, wow, like what's going on there?
Yeah.
But I had a lot of people like reach out and they're like, so what made you just like, what, tell me, like, how'd you decide that it was like over, or, you know, you're going to give it a shot, like we're therapy and blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't know if I, what I should do. I'm like, I can't answer like the sobriety thing. I'm like, I can't answer that for you. Like, you have to know whether or not it's worth it to you to like go to therapy and try to work on it, or whether you want to walk away or whatever. I knew that a lot of people, they're like, don't just walk away, go to therapy. And I was like, I am so past therapy. Yep. Like we're actually, it's over. Like, you know, but I was like, no one can tell you that. You have to figure that out.
No one could tell you anything about your
life.
That's
so true.
It's like, that was something I posted recently on Instagram.
Nor should they.
Nor should they. Right. I've heard this quote recently that I just love, which is, I'm too busy watering my own grass to notice if anyone else's is greener.
I love that.
But to apply that to this situation, I personally have found, and this is just my perception, that when people give me unsolicited advice and get really deep into wanting to guide me in my life, I kind of take a step back. I do listen to what they say because maybe there's something that I need to hear and let me just kind of process that. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes it's important to separate what they say and where it's coming from.
Yeah.
And then I look at them and I'm like, a lot, like 9 out of 10 times, they are going through so much in their life that they would rather focus on fixing my life, which they can be objective to, than taking care of their own little garden.
That's so true. I was actually just talking to a friend about that. He was like, it's much easier. I'm like, who takes care of you? You take care of all these people. And he was like, you know how it is. Like, it's much easier to take care of everybody else. I'm like, like the helper needs help sometimes. So like, ask for help.
And eventually you're going to run out of steam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
People will pick up on that.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. Another thing that I think is so inspiring about you and your story too is like, you are super fit, but you're also like in your 40s and super fit. And I always said that like in your 20s, majority of people, I think if they really apply themselves, or sometimes they don't even need to apply themselves, yeah, depending on genetics, it's easy for people to go into the gym and be like little gym bunnies and like, especially early 20s, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
But like, I was actually just had this conversation with my friend where I was like, guys are so into looks. And so like sometimes guys in their 30s or 40s, like you see, especially like guys who clearly don't have a lot of experience with relationships, they're so focused on like the physical that they'll say like, oh, we want a girl who's like in her early 20s because like she still looks good and whatnot. I'm like, you're doing yourself a disservice because any girl can look good in her early 20s.
Yeah.
What you want is a girl in her a woman, in like her 30s or 40s who's fit. Because if she's fit then, she's got a routine.
Oh, yeah.
You know what
it's
I mean?
It's hard.
Yeah, it's hard and it gets harder. Like my gynecologist, so talking about gynecologist. My gynecologist told me that like the average woman gains like 2 to 3 pounds each year.
Oh, yeah.
Without even like any lifestyle change or anything. Yeah. So like, let's say you are super fit, have a clean diet, you have to work that much harder. It's almost like a downwards escalator. So just to maintain where you're at, you have to do so much more momentum. So if you want to be even fitter,
you have to,
it's a lot.
And it's hard because like starting to go through like perimenopause, which I feel like no one ever talked about before. And I think it's a much bigger conversation now, I think as it should be. I've had a lot of friends like, we're like, hey, like, I've never tried to change anything, but like, I'm gaining a bunch of weight here or there. Or this is happening. And like, what are you doing? What am I doing? Like, how are you feeling? And we're kind of like, I think it's just like, especially like in your mid 40s, we're like, I don't know, is this a hot flash? I don't know. Like, it's feel like it's a more common conversation. And so it's like more supportive. But like, to your point, it's like, I have so many friends. And even for me, it's like your hormones go so out of whack. And it's like, okay, I'm doing all these same things. I'm not, you know, obviously I'm not even drinking anymore. I was like, but you know, I don't count my calories, but I eat the same things I've always ate. And then I'm like, well, why for like 7 days this month or whenever it is, like now I feel like more bloated or I'm gaining more weight or I had this like extra bag of potato chips and I feel like I gained 5 pounds. It's a lot. It's a lot. It's hard.
Being a woman is really hard.
It's hard.
Because like you're
it's great, but it's hard.
It is. Right. But you're constantly like, I think what's hard about being a woman is there's so many different seasons throughout like your adulthood where you are changing because of your hormones. Like I think they say 23 is the first time like you're having like a new puberty almost.
Yeah.
Where like your hormones change. And then when you turn 30, it changes again. And then I stopped paying attention after that because my brain shut off at 30. I'm like, I don't know what life looks like after 30.
Just don't think about it yet.
I mean, yeah, I do and I don't just because like, so this is another conversation that I've had recently with a friend and I'm a romantic, but I'm not so romantic that I'm not a realist to a certain degree, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So people get married for all kinds of reasons. I think in everyone's heart of hearts, they want to meet their soul connection and like have their happily ever after.
Yeah.
I think that's what everyone wants.
Yeah.
Get married once, have this amazing life and you grow together and it's bliss, right? And I think certain people make sacrifices along the way because dating comes and you date a lot of people and there's a lot of heartbreak, or you're not dating anyone because you're having dry spells.
Yeah.
And then you meet someone who's good. And you get along and you're not unattracted to them.
Right.
And you decide to get married because maybe it's that time in your life when you should get married, mm-hmm. you know? And I can't do it.
Yeah. That's what I did.
Really?
Yeah.
My parents are a big part of the reason why I'm such a romantic.
Yeah.
Because my parents, it is a second marriage for both of them.
Okay.
And so my dad is 78. So when he was getting married, this was back in the day, you know, when a traditional marriage was such a thing and people got married young.
Yeah.
Culturally. And so my dad was 26 the first time he got married. And I asked him, I'm like, did you love your first wife? You know, like, I know you guys got divorced, but in the beginning, did you love her? And he was like, meh. I was like, what do you mean, meh?
Yeah.
Like, I'm such a romantic. I'm like, marriage is not meh. Like, it should be more than that. And he's like, well, you know, I was a teacher. She was a teacher. We met. I liked her. She was nice. And it was time to get married. And she was there. And
yeah,
so we got married. And like, same thing with my mom, you know, in the Jewish, because my dad actually converted to Judaism. So he wasn't his first marriage.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
So cool. I actually have two siblings who aren't even Jewish, which is crazy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so, yeah, both my parents had kids in their previous marriage. I'm the only one from this marriage.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, and then my mom, she got married when she was like 22. And she said the same thing. Like, she had two younger siblings who were about to get engaged. And she kind of had a feeling that like he wasn't the one, but she like went ahead and got married, you know, and they were married for 11 years. And I forgot how long my dad was married, but he was married for quite some time, might've been 20 years or something. So it's not like it was a short time being married. They both had their go of it and they both had their good memories too. It wasn't like, there's no such thing as like all good or all bad. Yeah. There's a reason why you marry that person and you could totally grow and build and have a healthy relationship with them. But in the end of the day, it didn't work. And there was a certain point when it just...
You just realize that
you just can't do it.
Yeah.
And then my parents, my dad actually was engaged to someone else when he met my mom.
Oh, really?
Really? Well, she didn't officially meet her. She just walked by. But he kind of had that whoa moment where he was like, oh. And there was something like off about like the woman he was engaged to. So like that for sure wasn't going to last anyways.
Yeah.
And my mom, this is not a thing. There is no such thing as Jewish nuns. My mom was like, I'm going to be a Jewish nun. She's like, I'm so done with men. She's like, I have my two boys. I have my family. I was married. Like, it's good. It's fun. I'll figure it out. And my grandparents were like, no. There's no way. You're too young. Like, she was like, I think like 34, 36. They're like, no, we're going to fuck you someone. But like my parents both, and it's not that marriage was like perfect. There's no such thing as a perfect marriage.
Right.
I think marriage in general comes with hardships and challenges because life is hard and challenging at times.
Yeah, I agree.
But if you have someone who you're just like wild about, it makes it so much easier to like fight through those times.
Oh, yeah.
Because even if, as people say, the passion dies, you have something to reference.
Yeah.
And it could be like, well, we were there once. We can do it again. We can build back. Versus if it wasn't there, what's there really to fight for?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. For mine, it wasn't there.
Right. Because if you marry for compatibility.
Yeah.
And then the compatibility goes away because you realize the compatibility wasn't there.
Yeah.
What's there to fight for?
Yeah. We both changed a lot. He was only 25 when I met him and I was 29.
Yeah.
And I mean, we partied a lot and smoked cigarettes and didn't, I mean, I worked out and played tennis my whole life, but kind of like was a wild child in high school and college. And that kind of bled into like my 20s when I met him. So I was a pretty immature 29-year-old when we met, but we were a lot alike then. And we, you know, eventually like both quit smoking and things like that. But I think, again, if there wasn't like that, he wasn't my person. You know what I mean? Like, it just wasn't that like, the wedding day was fine. We got engaged and it was like, seemed like it was the right time to do it. Cause all of our friends were engaged. And I remember my wedding day. I was like, somebody was like, it's your happiest day of your life. And I'm like, is it? And I was like, it wasn't unhappy.
All my friends who have gotten divorced have all said that they knew on their wedding day.
And you can see it. You can see it in our photos.
Yeah.
And I don't know about his, he didn't really have doesn't have like the huge, like big smile, but like you'd see it all over my face that it wasn't like, I mean, you should literally be like so excited in my opinion that I'm day.
Bursting.
Like bursting with just so excited. And it wasn't there for me.
Yeah.
At all. And I just thought, well, like your mom and dad is like, oh, well, it's fine. We'll just go along and it'll, yeah.
Yeah. It'll work itself out. Maybe I'm just having, you know, last minute nerves or whatever. Like you convince yourself on so many things.
I'm like, his family's great. I mean, I loved his family. So I was like, it's great too. So.
It's like I said, no one's like completely bad or good. Yeah. And there's reasons why you chose to be with that person too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely. Yeah. Next time. I heard it's all about that second marriage.
I mean, my parents are proof.
See?
So I think so. And I think what I think is so actually really, really interesting as well is that people who get divorced, I think, have this renewed passion and intention for what they want out of life and relationships next.
Yeah.
Because they know what didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, and no one could tell you now about relationships. Like, oh, it's okay if it's just compatible and there isn't that passion because you're like, been there, done that. Yeah. I know that doesn't work.
My friends
work.
Say that, yeah, all the time. I'm like, yeah. They're like, well, you know, just because he's like not that cute. I'm like, it doesn't matter if the person's not, I'm like, I don't feel anything like
energy.
I was like, I've been there. I've been with the wrong person, like to your point. And it's like, I'm not going to do that again. I would rather just be, go along with my single self with my dog and my cat than just be with the wrong person just to be with somebody. Like,
yeah.
Because, it's not fun just to like be with someone for the sake of being with someone.
And I think I always say I'm a recovering type A. That's what I'm trying to get over. But for me with relationships, like, well, first of all, like I just couldn't have kids and not tell my kids that their father wasn't the love of my life. And also, I shouldn't even have to tell them. Like, they'll see and they'll be like, oh, my gosh, my parents are disgusting. Like, I can't. Like, they're just so all over each other. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, little TMI, but, like, key thing with my parents. Like, my dad was just hospitalized recently for a few days because he was dehydrated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you would think in the hospital he'd be kind of out of it. Whenever my dad walks in, also mind you, he has dementia too, right? Mm-hmm. So all these factors where people would be like, oh, the love is probably not there anymore. And they're just kind of in that caretake. They are. It's disgusting.
I love that. That's so,
so cute. Beautiful, but it's kind of disgusting. Oh. To the point where one time we went to a hospital earlier this year for something, because he's had a hard year this year, where like the nurse walked in and she was like, oh, you're the wife to my mom. And mom's like, yeah. She's like, I thought you were dead because of how he was talking about you. Because I'm talking about her, like, my wife is the most amazing person. I love her so much. I can't wait to see her again. Like, all these things.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, we walked into the hospital a few days ago, and my dad looked at my mom, and he was just like, I just want to make out with you.
That's the dream.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And, like, meanwhile, I have a friend who, like, she has gotten to this point where she's, like, over the dating scene, and she, like, really wants certain landmarks, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like, she wants the marriage. She wants the children. She wants the house. She wants, you know, the traditional look and lifestyle. And so she just doesn't necessarily feel like she's found that person. But I'm trying to, like, be like, no, like, that is so worth waiting for and fighting for. And, like, back to my type A personality where I was like, I used to want that too, right? I wanted to get married by a certain age and have kids by a certain age. And I had I was so anal that I had to figure it out, like, when I would be a great, great grandmother. Like, if they get married, if I have kids and then they get married and then those kids get married and I'll be a great grandmother by this age.
Yeah.
I had it all figured out, right? None of it happened. Like, none of it. So I had to rethink, like, how am I going to live my life? Like, am I going to wait? Or I definitely wasn't going to settle. That just isn't in me. I'm too passionate about life to do that.
Such a good quality.
I guess. But it's lonely sometimes to be that passionate too. Because it's like, especially if I'm talking to friends who don't have that same vision, right? They want it, but they're like, okay, but maybe it's time to be realistic. Settle down. What are the statistics? Anytime someone starts saying statistics about romantic relationships, I'm like, you don't.
No, you don't get it.
You don't get it. You haven't experienced it and you've given up.
Yeah.
And you've given up. And that's so heartbreaking to see because you're never going to experience it. And it's not that love is rare. I think our expectation is that we should get it by a certain age. And that's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, you don't know what God's plan is for your life and when it's going to happen for you. And it could be whenever. Like, we had a family friend. He never got married till he was in his 60s.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And she had been married before. She had kids. So when he married her, he married into this beautiful family with like grandkids and all of this.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
He proposed to her at like the St. Louis Symphony. Like it was like the most beautiful thing. And it was just like, you know, and he did get cancer and passed away like 5 years later. And so they were only married for 5 years. But he was so happy.
Oh my gosh.
For those 5 years, you know. And like the way I see it is ideally, no, I shouldn't end up right. being alone and only get married like later, you know. But like if I could only have like a few months or a few years with that amazing person, like to me, that's better than being in a 50-year relationship that's mediocre.
Yeah.
And my thought always was like, my luck, I would get married to someone who is meh, but compatible enough. And then the love of my life walks in, and I'll be like, crap, I could have had you.
Right. But I'm not available.
That's what I always think about. And I think the main thing is like, I don't view it as like, oh, marriage and then kids. It's more of like, I view it, I will find the right person when I'm supposed to, when we're both ready for each other.
Yeah.
And then we'll want to get married because that's the organic thing that's going to happen. And hopefully if I'm still young enough to have kids, then like we'll have kids. Yeah. And if not, there's so many other things that you can do.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, there's adoption and then there's like, no, there's so many ways to be a parent without being a parent. I don't even know. I don't know. I go back and forth on the whole parent thing.
I mean, I think it's like some people are like, I 100% want to do it. I was always kind of on the fence. Like,
I feel like
maybe
I'm like
take it or leave it. Like, it'd be cool if I was became a mom or not. Like, we tried. I had probably, I think, 5 miscarriages. And then just got to the point where I couldn't get pregnant. And this was like maybe 8 to 10 years ago. So I want to say like back then, like it was that long ago, but it was harder to like get all these like tests and things done and like covered by insurance. So it was like
it's still like that.
Is it still?
It's not so easy. Yeah. I know I saw there's this girl I follow on social media who had a really hard time.
Yeah.
And she went through IVF treatments and all of that. And she like actually went, I think it was like to the Senate to like fight bills to make it easier for women, to make it more affordable.
Yeah. Cause I mean, my doctors would like try to fight my insurance company each time I had to go get like my blood drawn, mm-hmm. like every like 2 weeks to see if it was like my hormones or whatever it was. And then, yeah, I mean, we just kind of got to a point where we're going to like start testing to see if the issue was with him. And then they were like, oh, you should go, you know, try IVF. And so we met and I remember going to meet with this doctor and I was like, yeah, I don't want to – he went through the whole process. And I was like, I don't want to do any of that,
yep.
like, at all. Like, I don't want to have a kid enough to go through that. I remember we went home, and he was really supportive with all that. My ex, he was like, you know, what do you want to do? I'm like, I don't want to do it. Like, I don't want to do it. Plus, I was like, if I'm having miscarriages, I'm still going to have miscarriages if we don't figure out why, and we have IVF. It's not like it's like a magic baby that, you know, or embryo, or that's not going to happen again. But then we thought about adoption. I was like, well, you know, I'm getting older. I was like, we could do, you know, maybe go through adoption. And we talked to a couple agencies and it's very expensive, as everyone knows. And kind of got off the phone and we discussed it with like finances and stuff. And he was like, it's so much money. Like, it's so much money. And I was like, well, what are we going to do? Just not have kids? And it was like this light bulb moment. And I was like, oh my God. It was the easiest decision that we ever made, at least for me. I don't know if it was for him as much. I think he would have gone forward and had kids if I had wanted to, but I didn't want to. So he was cool with it as well.
Yeah.
But it was like, I mean, we fought more over like what paper towels to get versus like whether or not we're going to have kids. And it was just like that, and it was done.
Right.
But it was hard. It was hard because everybody judges you on not having kids, especially as a woman.
Yep.
For him, it wasn't a big deal. No one said anything. But like for us, it was like, oh, well, you know, oh, it'll come, or you don't know what you're missing. And I'm like, oh, thank you so much. You also like don't know my story. It's not like and a lot of people still to this day will assume that I just maybe don't like kids or I didn't want kids. And mm-hmm. I'll have people say stuff. And every once in a while, if it's like the right day and the right moment, I'll be like, well, I actually tried and I had 5 miscarriages. And then it didn't work out for us. And people are like, oh, I'm like, just be careful.
Yeah.
Like what you say to people. But it is, anyway, I digress. But it's challenging.
Yeah.
It's challenging as a woman, like in your 30s, because everyone's like, there'd be like a day that I wouldn't be drinking. And somebody would be like, oh my God, are you pregnant? I'm like, no, I'm just not having a beer. I mean, it's ironic that it's alcohol, but it's like, oh, well, how are you feel? Like, how many kids are you going to have? Or what are you going to do? And
yeah.
Well, we were like sitting there struggling, trying to like get pregnant and stay pregnant. But
yeah. And I think as a woman in general with everything, the kids part is why people also pressure you into wanting to be in a relationship.
Yes.
As well. Because they're, I mean, for the most part, ideally you want to be married and have kids, right? Like you want the most stable environment if you're going to have kids. But I just love how people seem to assume that it's so easy to go find a relationship.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Like, it is and it isn't.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It totally does.
I'll share a little bit of my dating story.
Yeah.
So Orthodox dating is very different because you have a resume.
Oh, wow.
Quite literally.
Oh, wow.
It's your picture. It's your heights. Some people put their weight because people ask that question, believe it or not.
Wow.
It's insane. And then there's like your siblings, where they went to school, who they were married to, like all these background checks. Because in the Jewish community, we all know each other. It's like Facebook before Facebook.
Yeah.
And so really the key thing is to find someone who knows that person who you know. So you can do all this like ground research. So by the, and there's the references on there. By the time you go on a date, there's already been all this research done about values, where they're holding, if there's any skeletons in the closet. Sometimes you find out stuff, sometimes you don't. Sometimes people lie straight up to your face.
Yeah.
I've had that experience before too.
Yeah.
And then you go on the dates with this person, and like if you're very Orthodox, you don't touch at all before marriage, not even holding hands or kissing or anything. And so the dating period is very, very short. And so you can get engaged. Like if I could be, let's say for example, if I was Orthodox still, I could meet someone tomorrow and be engaged within a month to 4 months.
Wow.
And married a few months later.
Wow.
It's very fast.
That is so fast.
It is so fast, but it's also in a sense comforting because if you are an older single, let's say, you're like, well, I could be married in a year from now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like for real, like it could happen. But if you don't date that way, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So I dated like that. I never, I think even though I grew up with it being normal, it always freaked me out how fast it was.
Mm-hmm.
I never quite met anyone who I felt 100% safe with marrying. I don't know. I just never had that feeling. And they just didn't really, it just never was the right fit. Or I found someone who I wanted and they didn't want me.
Yeah.
So like those were the two things that would happen. Yeah. And then I was tired of that back and forth because I started dating when I was 19. And then when I was 24 was when I started like going on my religious journey, and I was just tired of Orthodox dating. Not that I would always get so many dates anyways. And so I decided to take a break, and it ended up being like a 3.5 year break where I didn't date anyone, like no one, intentionally and unintentionally at the same time. Like I was always in the back of my mind kind of open, but also really hoping nothing would happen.
Yeah.
But it didn't, because I really am a big believer in taking ownership of your energy and your story. And I felt that I'm the common denominator. So let me figure out myself before I step back into the dating scene.
Yeah.
And I really, really always want to meet someone organically, but I tend to be super shy unless like I know someone, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I'm the same.
So that's hard.
Yeah.
Also, like I was always like pretty basic. Like I go to the gym, I go to work, go to the grocery store, hang out with, if I go out, I'm with my friends. I'm not out to meet guys. So like, where was I ever going to meet someone organically, you know?
Yeah.
And then, oh my gosh. Yeah. It was a whole thing. And then I was like, last year, I was like, by the end of the summer, if I haven't met anybody, I'm going to go on the dating apps. Like for real.
Yeah.
And it's going to be my mission. And I'm going to get a boyfriend.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. And so it was, I think it was like August last year.
How did that work out?
I went on Bumble.
It's the worst.
I went on Bumble because I was like, I could set the tone. And, but when I tell you that I took it on as a second job, my friends made so much fun of me. I was more intense about that than I was in my actual like 9 to 5.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like on that. And I swiped yes to so many guys that I kept running out of matches. There's like no more men in your area. And sometimes I would like go to a different area to see like more. I'm like, and my whole goal was like to take it in like fun stride, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, I'm just here to meet people. I want to, I haven't been on a date in like 3.5 years. I want to just talk to people and we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And just kept it fun and light.
I think that's a good approach.
Talked to so many people, figured out what worked, figured out what didn't work, just kind of going back and forth. I was on it for about a month. I went on like 3 to 5 dates a week.
Wow.
With different guys.
Wow, you really
Yeah, I was intense about it. Yeah. And like, I was really chill about it too. So like, I remember there was one guy who like forgot about our date and he was like, I'm so sorry. Can we reschedule? I was like, yeah, no problem. And then I went back. I was really in the mood to go on a date that night. So then I went back and I had another date.
I love it.
And like, they all thought I was so chill. I'm like, I'm not chill. I just quite literally could replace you. Yeah, so right. It's like, fine. You know, like, you're not that important to me.
It's totally fine. You're just another number.
Yeah. But, you know, after a while, there was one that stood out to me. And I kind of felt guilty when I was still dating the other guys when he was dating me. And I also knew that he had already deleted the app. And was exclusively dating me, but I was still dating other people. But that wasn't for that long. I think it was like 2 weeks before I was like, you know what, let me just focus on him and the apps will be there and I can always go back.
Yeah.
So we ended up dating for like 6 months actually, and that ended up ending surprisingly. I wasn't expecting it, but I think it ended up being one of those things where it's kind of like you talk about, where he was a really great guy and I couldn't imagine not having him in my life, but at the same time, he wasn't my everything.
Yeah.
He didn't like, I don't know, I didn't feel that like crazy passion either. Yeah. And I heard this concept recently where it's like a lot of times girls want closure, right? And so he was the one that ended it. It was over a text. Actually, aww, after 6 months, aww, which I was like, I deserve better than
you
that.
You deserve way better than that.
And I was going to go through like this whole thing of like a response. And then I was like, you know what? No. Just going to move on. Because I have a very adult-like approach about dating where it's like, if
you're much more emotionally mature about it than I was.
I guess so. Now, it's not that I wasn't petty, and it's not like it didn't hurt my ego. Yeah. I think it hurt my ego that he broke up with me more than it hurt my heart.
Yeah.
If that makes
sense. Yeah, no, it totally makes sense.
You know, because no one wants to be the one who gets broken up with. You wouldn't be the one to walk away.
Oh, yeah.
Also, because even if maybe you knew that person wasn't your person, you didn't have time to emotionally prepare, and then all of a sudden it's over.
Yeah.
And I've also learned never to ask why they broke up with you. Mm. You never want to know.
No.
Because it's never going to help you.
No, it's not going to help. And most of the time, it's not even going to be the truth.
It's not the truth. It's their truth.
Yeah.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah.
And so my response to him after his text was, I was like, I had a feeling. I really enjoyed getting to know you. I think you're going to do great things. I wish you the best.
Perfect.
And then I scrolled through all of our text messages and read them all, like through the story, like, you know, the whole thing all over again. And then I deleted them and I deleted his number and all of our pictures. That was it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this concept of closure, I went on ChatGPT because I saw this on TikTok.
Yeah.
Where it was like, what you should do is you should go, and if you didn't get a good breakup, you can type in the story and it gives you different endings. If they would have done it in person, if they would have done it over the phone, how it would have. And I was reading best case scenario of how he could have broken up with me.
Yeah.
Obviously, it isn't real, right? But I'm just like, in my mind, I'm just playing it out. And I'm like, you know what? There's no way he could have gone about this that I would have felt good about it.
Yeah.
Like none. Even if he said the perfect script in person, took me out to dinner and like did it that way, there's no way that this situation could have been better. Should he have done it better? For sure. That's on him. This situation, none of this would have been better. So I learned from this, and I also saw this on TikTok recently too. I learned a lot on TikTok. Yeah. That it's like, you don't want closure. You just have to recognize that sometimes, whether it's a job or a relationship or friendships, there's this concept of completion.
Hmm. I like that.
They were in your life for the season that they needed to be in your life.
Yeah.
And you don't need to overthink it. If they were still meant to be in your life, or that job was still meant to be in your life or whatever, it would be.
Yeah.
So if it's not, it's complete.
Yeah. I saw something on Instagram. I think it was Steven Tyler? No, that's the Aerosmith singer. Anyway, about that, like, people come into your lives like for seasons.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can be your whole life. And it was just something I never thought about. Like, you know, like, oh, even, I mean, it's even with friends. I have so many friends that the same situation, like your best friends at one point in your life. And now it's people I don't even talk to. And it's just like, I think grasping that concept that not everyone is meant to be with you. They're meant to like teach you a lesson, and maybe you're there to teach them a lesson, and whatever it was. And each relationship kind of like builds up. And if you learn something from it, then awesome. I learned a lot from my marriage and my divorce. And I learned a lot. I've dated two people. since I've gotten divorced, like for, you know, been on a lot of first dates.
Yeah.
But I will say, even the guy I dated him for like not even 2 months, he came to my house and did it in person. At least your guy should have at least done that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make it any better. I still wasn't expecting it.
Right.
And it's like, it, to your point, it was like, it, well, it still sucks.
It doesn't matter.
But yeah. It doesn't matter. It was, I didn't still, didn't make me feel great.
Right.
And it was somebody that I knew wasn't my right person. And I was almost like, oh man, I wish I would have done it first.
Right.
Like,
yeah. Literally. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, going back to the season thing, I mean, I try to remind myself in like those little bit of like heartbreak situations that what am I going to learn from this? What am I going to take away from this? And then it's going to, I know more going forward for like my next relationship that I'm in, like even more so what I don't want and what to avoid. And
they're all stepping stones. Yeah. Yeah. And like, for me, I was like, listen, sometimes God has to remove your boyfriend to make room for your husband.
Exactly.
You know, like I was thinking about it because I went through, you know, they say, what is it, the 7 stages of grief, or is that what it is? Like after. Yeah.
It's like, I don't know what they are, but it's.
I don't know what they all are either, it's but like it's like the last one,
and
anger, and then denial, sadness, yeah, like all these. I went through all these different emotions, not in any specific order.
Yeah.
And then there would be times that I thought I was fine. And the next week was not fine.
Oh yeah.
And it's, then it really does. And then there was just this aha moment literally last week where I was like, it was never gonna work out.
Do you love those moments? It's like, interesting. Okay.
I'm okay. It was like, yeah, just like one day I was okay. And then I was like, it was never gonna work out. It was a great relationship. It didn't end great, but it was a great relationship when it was in the relationship.
Yeah.
It was never meant to be my forever person, but like in the moment, it was what I needed.
Yeah.
And I, to your point, learned what I needed to learn. Mm-hmm. And I'm a better person for it moving, yeah, forward. It's so interesting.
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this one guy I dated last summer was the first person I dated after my divorce. And he was all wrong for me in when it came to like any sort of like long-term anything. But like you said, it was exactly what I needed. Like in that moment, like he was, whether it was like, you know, you don't really know anybody after like 2 months, but he was like very supportive. Like my ex-husband was not big on like compliments ever. So I didn't have like a really high self-esteem when I was married to him. Like I never know, ever like, oh, you're pretty, or you look really nice tonight, or you're sexy or whatever.
Oh, wow.
And like this, yeah, guy came and like did that. And I was like, yeah, I am. Like it was exact, like he was exactly what I needed for, yeah, to like help bring like that part back out of me where I was like, just for so long, because I mean, my ex-husband was never like, well, you're ugly, but never, there just was never that like
words of affirmation. Yeah.
Ever.
So and I isn't had that just kind interesting? Of like that. Now, you know, that's really important.
Yeah.
To
you. Yeah. No idea.
Yeah.
Like until I got it and I was like, oh my gosh, like I actually really need that. Like I don't need someone to like validate their feelings for me every single day, but
yeah,
just that little, yeah, I had no idea.
My boyfriend was, when I was with him, like on our dates, like he was the best. Like we would never have a date that was like less than like 6 or 8 hours, right?
Yeah.
But he was a terrible communicator via text or like calmly, like in between. So like we'd have these great dates. And then in between, there was so much time that would pass that I would like kind of fall out,
yeah,
love in between.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there was no momentum carrying it on. And I never realized that a guy texting me would be like so important to me. And so like now whenever guys do text me, even if it's like just like friends, if they're texting me all the time, I'm like, oh, this is nice.
Right.
That's a lot.
Right.
Like I didn't know this is important to me, but this is, yeah, really important to me.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like, yeah, you don't know until you go through it.
Yeah. It's so interesting. But I think it's also important to let people be who they are and not necessarily require it, because it's like you just want to see how people naturally show it, because some people aren't big texters and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But now I know that that's important to me. And like, I almost feel like it's easier just not to date those people than to ask them to become it.
Yeah.
Because if it doesn't come naturally to them, it won't work.
It's forced. And then you can feel that it's forced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really big on not forcing. And so, yes, that's why this time I'm not really doing the dating apps anymore, because I'm like, you can't force it.
No.
To my point, the whole reason we went on this whole tangent was that you could go on any dating app, and especially as a woman, I think, if you really, really applied yourself and really took dating apps like a job, you could be in a relationship.
Oh, for sure.
I could be in a relationship right now if I wanted to be.
So, yeah.
Being in a relationship is not hard.
No.
Finding the right person.
Yeah.
That takes time.
Absolutely.
And the right timing. And it's unfortunately so out of your control.
Yeah.
So.
That's been a hard thing to, you know, to realize as well. Like.
Yeah.
Controlling what you can and then letting go of the stuff that you can't.
Yeah. My biggest thing in life right now is one thing, like, this is my truth, is that, like, the only thing that I feel that we have self-control over is how we react to what life brings our way.
Oh my gosh. So true.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
I think that's the only thing we have control over. Yeah. But to wrap up this episode, I think what's so cool about, like, each of the topics that we've discussed today, especially like the sobriety part, is that you knew what you needed to do. And everyone who needs to change their life in whatever area knows what they need to do. But it's just that moment where you finally decide.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Because I had those moments all the time. I always knew what I needed to do.
You know.
A million different things.
Yeah. And then, you know what you need to do. You know what's wrong. You technically even know within you what the solution is and how to do it and apply it. You just weren't ready.
No.
And that's okay.
Yeah. Timing's everything.
Yeah.
I did it like I needed. All the things that happened that led up to that moment, I need to remove the other things from my life that were going on before that. And in order to come to that conclusion there.
Yeah.
With that, for sure.
I feel like, this is such a great conversation. there were so many like takeaways and life lessons, but I do have this tradition in my podcast. This whole podcast is based on this Hebrew quote, which is Eze Chacham, Halamei Mikol Adam, which means one who is wise is one who learns from everyone. I like to ask my guests if they could share a life quote or life lesson that really impacted them.
Yeah, I actually, so I'm not great at like remembering things. I have a little piece of paper here that I want to read. So it's a little, just a quick quote. Because you can't go back and change the beginning, but you can start where you are and change the future. Cool. So for me, that just like goes into really everything in my life. So because obviously everything that's happened in our past makes us who we are. If you took those hard times away, we wouldn't be the people we are today. So I try to remember that because it's hard not to go back and be like, oh, I wish this wouldn't have happened or I would have done this differently, whether it's like a relationship, job, divorce, whatever it is. Or even just getting married in the first place. But it's like it all brings you to where you are and you have the control to let that go and just kind of like start over wherever you are. And it's not like starting over from scratch or if you're starting over from like all this experience that you already have and like all that learned experience and then just moving forward.
To that point, you know when people say like everyone goes through this moment where you realize your parents are human?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then almost to the point where you're like, so much we have to work through with that. But your parents did the best that they could with what they had. And that applies to you as well. Whereas like if you look back on the different seasons of your life, you made the best decisions that you could with the tools that you had at that point.
Yeah.
So it's like unfair to judge where you are right now. To look back, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's so true.
Because all those experiences made you who you are right now.
Yeah.
And I heard this quote that said, if I could take back all of the mistakes that I've ever made, I wouldn't exist.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is cool.
It's so true.
Yeah. Oh, this is so great.
I know.
I feel like we could definitely do a part two.
Yes.
Because I feel like we like brushed the surface on a lot of these and we could probably go deeper and even talk about other stuff too, to be quite honest. But I think this is a good place to leave everyone for today, for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much for listening. This was another great episode. And if you guys are only listening and not watching, we have the video on YouTube and Spotify. So do you want people to come follow you on Instagram?
I have two Instagram accounts. One is C Thatcher Fitness. And the other one is Caroline Wallace STL, Caroline.WallaceSTL, or maybe not a dot. I'm not really sure.
It's okay. We'll share both.
I've got both.
We'll look it up after this. Yeah. We'll share both and we'll have it on the screen so you guys could follow. But this is so great. Thank you for joining.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
This is great.
This is so great. I hope you guys have a great week. Let's get it. Let's go.